resistance update on the agenda. We should know what the hell is
going on. I could reach out to get more.
Yeah, we're gonna go back, that's next.
Well, with the fire extinguisher stations, that was gonna be a great thing. And then I have the weird sculptures that have an arc end, the broccoli, and then the hydraulic.
His arc installations.
And that's just done just because there's always like 30 or 20 boxes of arc end, and some weird thing, and people, they're like, whoa, I saw some. But we need one at this end of the camp.
Pretty smart.
It's just, whatever, because it's hard when it's late at night, you wake up, and people are panicking, and there's 40 people standing around, and really wanting to save somebody that's blue on the ground, and every second's hurting them, but yet you can't get one person to breathe for them half the time. I can't keep saying this and then not getting this training done for a bunch of people.
So we maybe should have another class that's just nothing but that.
I
think so. I'm certified, but we have to get like somebody. I don't think just anyone can reach that. I don't think so.
Well, I could just do it for fun, you know, just to tell my friends how to do a couple things.
I've seen
and
that.
Keep it basic. Push nose, tilt the head back slightly, right. And see that chest rise with just solid. Because I saw some go. And it's like, no, you're not even getting anything in there, but they're like, I'm trying so hard. And then the boyfriend comes up and goes, what the hell? I've been punched so many times.
I need to go see an air cooking.
But
what else do we have on the agenda?
Okay, so now we're going to go into the declaration and the campaign of
preemptive resistance.
Yeah, making sure that we have a good plan to make sure the camp doesn't get shut down. So you have a report, Jeb, on the declaration.
So the pledge is not totally kind of ready yet, but we're going to be talking about it tomorrow at the DSA meeting, and then I think we can send it out to kind of everyone to take a look at it as well. And the idea is that this is going to be like an organizing tool, so it's something that we might kind of want to organize like canvases around the neighborhoods here to like talk to people, and it's more than just a statement of like support of the campers. It's like a commitment that if there's an eviction notice, that housed folks are going to set up an alternative encampment, bring tents, all of that stuff, and welcome people to come and kind of camp with us. So that's the idea. And I apologize for not having the language.
Is there much interest in that among people you know?
What's the DSA?
Democratic Socialists.
Oh, cool.
Of America.
Can I go to that?
Yeah, I think that
they... Are they all utilizing government shutdown utilizers? Or no?
The meetings are open to anyone. We're having one tomorrow online.
Cool.
And we'll be in person at some point.
I don't do electronics, so...
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't either. Don't feel bad.
Yeah, I think there's some support. I think the bigger thing is that this becomes, a tool that we can, take to organize ourselves and to draw people kind of in. So it's something that you can go and talk to people with as the occasion for a conversation. So you go to someone's door, you talk about the kind of the encampment, you talk about Tolo, you talk about what happened in December, all of this stuff. So I'm not a fan of pledges and petitions as goods in and of themselves. They're the occasion for organizing conversations. And so the goal is really to And this is the thing that we need to talk about, I think, tomorrow at the meeting is...
Do you believe in treaties?
How do we kind of organize, ourselves around a pledge, not just, what is the pledge? Yeah.
Right. It might be helpful to talk about the shutting down of San Rafael and of Sausalito in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And I guess you were having some other reports, Keith, about... Well, you were on the Zoom meeting yesterday, both of you, I imagine, on the...
A lot of that was confidential, though. We...
Well, but some of it's publicly happening.
Took a confidentiality agreement. Well, we're working on some larger scale litigation that would go beyond the scope of Santa Cruz. So I can say that. That's what we're working on.
Right. No, I'm not really talking about...
There was no really reports too much about sweeps specifically.
When the reason I mentioned the sweeps is because there seems to be a general balmy attitude, you know, relax, that everything's going to be fine for the summer, nothing's going to happen, which may be true. But the whole purpose of what we were discussing a week ago was the assumption that something probably will happen for one reason or another, but maybe it won't. But to be ready for it to happen in some way...
We're working on that, Robert.
To have, well, I'm talking.
Well, there's a couple. I think there's two different things happening. There's what.
I'm not talking about the law. I'm talking about the camp organizing.
Yeah.
We are working on that.
Telling people, like, here are examples of what's been happening at other places.
Well, I mention it because I think there's a time factor, and also, a lot of the support that the camp got in December happened because house people committed themselves to come down here and did and set up tents. A few of them. And then a cafe, you know, a comrades cafe, and that might not happen again.
That's what we're working on right now.
What's that?
That's what we're working on. That's what the pledge and stuff like that is getting started. Well, is Plan B.
Yeah, well, I know, but I'm saying though that it's not just I think an organizing tool for general stuff. This is a very specific.
Right. Totally.
Very something. You know,
it is specific.
And so a lot of people might not want to do this. They might be interested in general issues and so forth. But this is, you know, it's...
Well, that's why we need to get it up and launched so we can see what kind of feedback we have.
So I'm imagining, like we're doing several things as we're having these organizing conversations. So one is just, like, the general political end. Like, that's kind of a part of...
I mean, I'm not criticizing what you're doing.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, this is also not fully, like, formed yet. So that's a piece of it. Another is getting people to sign the pledge, which, you know... is like an actual commitment that if there's a sweep, I, Jeb Perucker, am going to do X with my tent. And like, so that's a part of it. And then the other is that if people aren't there yet, if people aren't ready to like commit to something like that, we're still getting their information and we're still kind of getting together kind of a phone tree list, a text list, so that if there is something, you know, like a sweep happening, we've got a network of folks. So that we don't have to do what we did back in December, where we were kind of
getting sweeps by other
we were trying to like build that like.
So are we protecting the police or are we?
And so the idea is that we're starting
police.
To build that.
Now. So Plan B, yeah, is sort of a phase program that we're working on. The first phase of.
So then the other part of that, what that we talked about last week, was that we would do an educational event that Alicia and I are organizing. And that we would then also have a nonviolent direct action workshops or preparations in the build-up. I think we should go pretty fast, and I don't think that we should be thinking, oh, we're just going to, everything's going to be fine for the summer. There's like a, you know, for instance, the recall of Newsom could open up, once that's over, no matter what happens, that could be a green light to attack. But then he doesn't have to pretend like he's not for the obligation to accept shelter anymore, which he now has to kind of be in a fine line because of the his opponents are all about that, even though that was his original proposal before COVID. So, yeah, I think that it's very likely that there'll be massive sweeps and that San Lorenzo may be one of them.
I mean, I'm just mentioning there were two sweeps in the last 2 weeks of similar camps. One in San Rafael, supported by the Union of the Homeless, and another in Sausalito, supported by the Union of the Homeless, that got moved.
I fished down and they literally came and swept the whole thing down.
And did they give them supplies and everything?
There was limited supplies given in Sausalito and San Rafael, very limited, crappy additional places to go.
No, they didn't.
I mean, I guess the whole point of this would be that unless there really are legitimate places to go, if people, those who are interested would tell the authorities we will be setting up some kind of an alternate camp as a deterrent to their doing this. It's not so much, you know, let's fight with the police. It's more because you have no place for people to go, we have to provide a place. We're not going to tell you where, we're not going to tell you, we're not going to tell you how protesty it'll be, but it'll be a place, and that may be, that merely saying that alone may be sufficient to deter them if you have the people in place to do it.
Right.
You know, that's the issue.
May I interject? So, adjacent, and it's perfectly timed on those comments, we are often, and I've been at this for 20 years alongside Robert, resisting, and we start getting to understand the sort of the tidal action, the seasonal action of camps, building, receding, building, and here we understand this one will go away at least come November.
Yeah.
But there are other
we're putting them all down there.
There are other reasons totally for camps to come and go, and so I assert, and you don't have to agree with me, that no temporary camp is forever. So what we need, what we're missing, lacking, regardless of the circus that the city council is involved in these days, is a camp displacement policy, a simple three-point thing that anytime they close a camp like this, like they didn't do in December, the thing that was missing was where are they fucking supposed to go to? And then what we're trying to establish is the second point, how will they get there?
Yeah.
Historically, you can't just expect people, what we saw with the Ross camp, or all these, the last two camps here, people have to drag their things across town, half of the stuff gets stolen, lost, it is the worst thing that could occur. So then, so what we've been able to demonstrate with the agreement camps is, they followed it to the letter with Harvey West moving over here. They took that displacement policy. Where are they going to go to? What are the infrastructure elements that they want? We use city trucks. And then some expectation of behavior when you go into a new place that includes environmental concerns, neighborhood concerns.
Well, the third part needs to be oversight so that the city's not passing out fake motel vouchers as well.
Sure.
Like somebody needs to make sure.
I'm just saying generally is placement happening. Putting that out there so we could just, as we're always in this protest moment.
My business email is living.
Because what I witnessed with the Ross camp is that they pretended to do something like that, and people were displaced anyways.
We know we need a policy through the city council.
But I think the key
No side talk for a bit. It's hard to hear.
Good policy and good oversight and enforcement of the policy is by doing something that we have not been particularly good at doing, which is organizing housed people in the neighborhoods around encampments in support of their neighbors.
Yeah.
I mean, like that's the goal. And like, I know that you're doing stuff like, you know, around, you know, Felker, and that you've got like good relationships, you know, with people there. But like, it's that type of organizing on a city.
Are you on your way?
That needs to go into
Do you really believe the people adjacent to these camps are supportive of the camps?
No, I think that they are currently not, and I think that is an organizing project. I think that that's not something that we take as like a.
We're working so hard at that, and it's a literal up the wall.
Yeah, it's a hard thing.
Worthwhile organizing is.
You probably get my glorious neighborhood, my glorious neighbors. Forgive my sarcasm, Seabright, of Seabright Strong fame. We can get them in support of a camp that's really far from the neighborhood.
Well, that's the problem in this town, is that the city organizes to make sure that, the city went up and organized everybody below the golf course to be angry that there were going to be somebody at the armory. Finally, the thing just broke, you know?
Oh, yeah, the city attorney sent somebody in the old folks' apartments over there to have a meeting to stir up anger.
Yeah.
And get declarations against us.
Yeah.
The cops canvass neighborhoods too, about like the cops go around with surveys and like that's a thing that happens, and we need to be kind of
doing our own thing. I think that's a really good idea.
We have neighbors every time, every day, come down here looking for stolen shit. Every single day that happens. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm saying over and over again. We need to deal with the trash. The videos of the fires that happen in here, those need to keep.
We also
from
need
circulating
to support the narrative
there.
That homeless people
we
are
need to make sure
doing
that,
fests, like, yeah. You know, that big warehouse that was
talking stick
on Delaware, you know.
Cigarette's not a talking
house
stick,
people
Alicia.
In a giant theft ring. It's not homeless Smoky people, matters, so you should remind people when they come here. They may find their items, but it's not just homeless people that are stealing.
So, okay, so I think that's a good point that actually actually most of the theft in the community is actually by house people, probably because there's a lot more house people, so it makes sense that that would be true. And there is this assumption that if you're unhoused, you're stealing things, and we definitely have a lot of stuff stolen by, you know, that we find, and because, like, we lose all our brooms, we lose all, you know, anything that could be taken away gets taken away. But it's also, you know,
does
it's just like...
Does anyone have an encyclopedia?
No, but that's not part of the agenda right now. Yes?
I have a question for Jeb, a follow-up. May I?
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, I like the idea of systematic organizing in the neighborhoods, because I really think it's important to find our support. So even if, let's say, we were new 100 doors and we were able to find five people who were like, yeah, I think we need to build some emergency shelter, like an actual...
We should pass this around for a
lot of years. You know, kind of like maybe what Pauly Lee is. But what if we don't necessarily have to present solutions, although that would be my favorite one. We have actual, instead of paying hundreds of thousands of dollars all the time in cops and firemen and tents only and endless city council discussions since at least the mid-90s that I've documented here, that, you know, that we find our support, that we have some kind of a compelling speech to go door to door with, and even if we don't have a lot of support, I mean, I just want to say that I would like to hear how Jeb thinks about organizing that, because I know, for example, in the environmental movement, Greenpeace was largely built, the Sierra Club was built by people going door to door and finding, at that time, small numbers of supporters, and over time, as the economy becomes more and more, you know, an oligarchy or whatever, and more and more people are ending up homeless, I think more and more people are going to be, you know, looking for some answers, like, you know, is this really just a bunch of drug users, or is it the economy, or is it policy, like, but at any rate, I think it's important to start supporters, and I also think it's important, this is my opinion, I'm almost finished, to do it in a systematic way, because people aren't home sometimes when you go door to door, another time you find a great supporter there, students move, whatever, but I just wanted to kind of follow up with that, because I think that it's going, we need a strong, compelling, short speech to hear where people are at and try to find our supporters.
How far through the agenda did I get?
I mean, I don't think
we're
it's
still
just
on canvassing
like,
on the declaration.
It's about like having kind of like
you can always get.
It's not just about like going out and finding the people who already support this thing or something like that. Right? You need to have regular, repeated conversations with people where you're not trying to like argue with them or anything like that. You're listening to their concerns and I mean that's just kind of like in union organizing, like that's what you do. You like you don't do you don't start in with, yeah, but you let them do 70% of the talking, and it's the regularity of the contact that, like, Josh and his group, the walking circle, the organizer circle, were doing this down in Lower Ocean for a while, where they were just going out every single week, and people's positions change. Like, after you've had, you know, a dozen conversations with someone, they'll be in a different place than you had one conversation. So it's about like setting up these kind of like regularized kind of contacts, and like I see like a pledge or a petition or something like that as a way to start having these conversations. But like if we're just waiting until an eviction is imminent, then we're going to be scrambling and, you know, trying to hold up a fence against cops. With
you got to build context for them by doing that over and over again.
Totally.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Also, I have one idea.
It worked.
Crystal's doing it in Sacramento, but she's doing a community pasta dinner, like cook your favorite pasta, come out and break bread with your houseless neighbors, learn about the homeless union, learn how you can get involved. We could also do something like that and kind of open it up.
to also add, I believe like Jeb was like talking about there being important issues to like city neighbors that are in support of like houses folks, and there's not that many. I think there's like Santa Cruz, what's it called? I think it was like West Side Cares, but
yeah, West Side
Yeah,
Cares.
We could get West Side Cares Santa involved. Cares, they would probably be into a pasta dinner because that's what they're about, is changing the narrative and kind of like, you know, getting closer with their neighbors.
Yeah, Scalers. Yeah, Scalers group. And like, they mentioned how they kind of like change it to like Santa Cruz wide. So probably getting them in into the works, since they're already doing that work itself, like doing the work double. Might as well involve them to expand that network.
Because one thing I did notice, like with the Ross camp, is that the events did help humanize homelessness, just because we're just people who lost our houses. And that's kind of really where we need to get back to. We really need to be just pushing that as much as we can, that we're just people that lost our houses. We're the same. You know, we really want the same rights. You know, housing us doesn't have to be undignified. We need to be pushing that majorly right now.
Yeah. And like, to add on to that, like, I believe legalistic solutions. I know, like, in the last meeting with Abby that I was at, I don't know the uptick towards it, but there's, like, a legal clinic, a free legal clinic for houseless folks to attend. I think it's open every Wednesday, 10 to 12. And I know, like, Abby's in connection with that, but also getting them to just, like, give that legal education for folks. You know, there's like more voices to make folks, houses, folks aware of that.
We can turn that pasta dinner into, you know, pasta and education, you know, where everybody's collaborating, getting together. We can all pass out our literature. It could be, you know, big conversations surrounded by breaking bread.
Yeah, exactly.
A huge community conversation about what's going on in Santa Cruz.
So now, one of the reasons for this event is to build a coalition of housed and unhoused people.
But I gotta go because I have to get back to my kids.
Yeah, so anyway, so that's the you know, that, so that's the organizing idea around this, is the connection between, so there's kind of two things that tenants and homeowners could connect with around issue of homelessness. And one of them is the fact that all these luxury condos are being put up, that the housing prices are being jacked up because of vulture capitalists are just buying up properties like crazy, and that there's 40 million Americans that are facing eviction right now.
You know what I was thinking? We need to try to figure out, I don't know how, but what percentage of that is Santa Cruz facing? Like, what percentage of our local renters are part of that crisis, and how many of them have received the aid? Like, what are we looking at locally as far as more houselessness?
Now, it's my understanding that we actually were in a worse situation than other communities, that it was a higher percentage of people behind on rent. And
well, we have a higher number of unhoused individuals anyways, just for our city in California. We have a high number.
Businesses closed, people lost their employment.
How about trying to do a kind of a follow-up event to this one? Someplace maybe on the west side? Where we could invite people to come, and what you were saying about the kind of pasta potluck or something, and maybe we could form out of that, have perhaps somebody or a group do a presentation with maybe different parts to it. Camp being one, maybe, but I don't know the timeline. Another part could be the economics in Santa Cruz and how that relates to the larger country or not, but there could be maybe a research group. What I'm just suggesting is this idea that y'all have of bringing people together and kind of forming a coalition. But a big, maybe a part of that could be to try to reach out in the neighborhoods and get people to come. In other words, get house people to come, get some unhoused people to come who are either in that neighborhood or not or interested. And try to follow through into building an organization to, you know, address these key issues. Like, maybe, what do y'all think of that? Because I do feel like it's not a totally lost cause, what you're talking about, Keith. All the, even though they're about to go up, yeah.
I gotta go.
Anyway, that's just, okay, I would like a follow-up with that idea. And the idea being, you know, we have different groups to do research and on this. Another group, maybe to do outreach in the neighborhood to get people to come to dinner. I don't know. Bring it home with anybody?
So that, well, I bought the rights to show this film twice. You have to pay, like, I'm paying $250 to show it twice. Because you can't show it in the United States without that. And so my thought was that we would do a second one somewhere. And so what had happened when we did the public, we had all this interest and people wanted to come and see it. They missed it and they were upset and they heard it was great. And so then, I'm anticipating that people come to this, here it's great. And then everybody want to see it again. So I'm hoping to rent a space to show it the second time and advertise that at this one. So that that way then they can spread the people that found it interesting and tell their friends about it, will get to see the it'll be over here. But I am with the idea of it is to be organizing to like, it would be great to have the pledge ready for this and have a conversation with everybody that appears, like, this is what the pledge is, we also have a program to show how we can't trust the city when they say there's a place for everybody, because see, that'll be what happens, right? They're going to put up the 72-hour notice, and then they're going to say, oh, there's a place for everybody, no problem, just like they did with Ross Camp. And the liberals are going to go, oh, yeah, great, they got hotels, which means five people got two nights at the hotel like last time. And 60 tents over at the Boneyard. And then safe sleeping, dusk to dawn in a parking garage. And that should meet the requirements of Boise, Martin v. Boise. And so we have to, like, educate people that that's the case. Because the well-meaning people, that's how they, you know, I have a friend who, when they kicked out Ross Camp, she was attending the 100-year birthday of a mutual friend of ours. And she's like, oh, it's so great. They're providing housing for everybody at Ross Camp. This is just wonderful. Because the way the headline was and the way Jessica York's report was, because she just basically quoted, Susie O'Hare. So it's designed specifically to get everybody thinking it's solved. So that's something we have to organize before. Also,
how many people are at the camp?
At this camp?
Yeah.
I would estimate it's near 400.
Jeremy's estimate is 170, so somewhere between there.
Okay.
170. Yeah, it's hard to say. It's like 200 tents.
Yeah.
It's 200 separate locations.
It'd
be very unusual for some tents to have nobody in them.
Nonviolent direct action organizing committee, and to see if we can use that, either the follow-up push meeting or the pasta dinner, to, after people are, you know, hopefully given a presentation or educated a little bit about the city's pattern, to invite people in.
Yeah, so then our at the last meeting, the strategy that we proposed is very similar to what you just said. Our idea was that we'd have the pledge, and then we would have the second thing would be the educational thing that about how the city lied about housing people after the Ross Camp,
mm-hmm.
with evidence. We have slides and stuff we're going to show. And then after that will be the nonviolent direct action preparation.
Is this event 14th?
Hmm?
When will this be?
Well, we don't have dates for those two events.
Okay.
We have the 14th event.
Right.
And we're hoping we can organize the other two events before that time, plus a second showing of Push can be advertised on the same flyer at that event. We'll have the pledge at that event. So that's what we're hoping to have happen.
With you. I'm kind of slightly out of the loop here, but when it was the 29th, the court ruling was supposed to come down from. What happened?
Oh, the injunction was vacated. The city can kick everybody out anytime they want.
It was canceled.
And that was mostly based on, like, the COVID.
Yeah, that there was no threat of COVID, yeah.
Based on the failure to raise the issue of shelter in a meaningful way, and the failure to raise the issue of the false promises of the city in the past.
Well,
that was in the hands of the attorney who did that.
Yeah, and the judge wouldn't hear any of that.
But it wasn't attempted, that's the point.
He attempted it.
Not in papers, it wasn't attempted. It was not attempted in filings.
Well,
that's the point.
Yeah, but that was clear that there was no possible way. I mean, whenever we broached that with the judge, she said, that's another lawsuit. Right, so that's where that went to.
We disagree on this issue, as you can hear.
Yeah. So there was no, it was all, she wanted it focused, and you could hear that clearly the entire time of the all the court appearances, that she was focused on it being COVID.
Yes.
And every time we try to slip in something now, she goes, no, that's another lawsuit. We're not going to talk about that. This is about COVID.
The judge.
The judge, yeah.
But there was no papers filed documenting all the claims of the false bullshit in terms of the shelter in the past. And that became an issue at the very end of the trial because the attorney Anthony Prince signed on to the idea that it was okay to move to the bench lands, that it was that the city was doing a pretty good job in helping folks in the city generally, although there were, they acknowledged there was a shelter shortage. But the specific problems is what I think needs to be researched and actually laid out even before this, you know, this one-time event as a document. And because that's something that could get some wide circulation, I think, too.
Yeah, I think that'll be part of what Alicia and I put together.
I'd be happy to, and happy to help, just let me know.
Yeah, and then, and then we have, you know, there's a whole lot going on behind this.
Scenes. Okay.
Yep. On Zoom. It's on Zoom.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Do you get the emails?
I think I do.
Okay, so there should be a link in the most recent one. Yeah.
Thank you.
No, you gave me the original.
I'd like to make a real brief comment. I did sort of shush Alicia, and I apologized to her because I mocked her.
Oh, she interrupted somebody who was talking.
But it's because I am trying to bring people who aren't used to attending meetings and parliamentary procedure and whatever it may be. I want to find ways that things are comfortable and that, but yet that there is. I mean, I learned at Huff, you know, how vicious things can get when enforcing rules. But that's how things happen. That's how things continue. So I'm going to try to gather some people and have some little mini meetings. Just show people, because it's so important to get more people's input. And whatever it takes to get that to merge with parliamentary procedure, you know, got to do that. So I did.
Well, you know, one thing that would be really valuable but has been really frustrating, the purpose of the Friday meetings was that there would be no unhoused people. Everybody would be from the camp here. It would be self-governing the camp to take Jeremy out of the loop. That's supposed to be intentionally done.
Yeah.
We've had total failure in that.
But see, we can do that. We have to
because that's what's important.
Eliminating him from his presence here doesn't eliminate their presence in controlling the camp.
There should be like a camp. Our idea was there would be a camp council meeting of people from the camp.
Yeah.
That met every Friday at 5 to determine the direction of the camp for the next week.
Do you think a different spot? I feel like that was debated earlier, but I don't know.
Well, it needs to be near the camp, and this is the only place that's kind of comfortable because Jeremy usually takes the picnic tables and the canopies away during our meetings.
Who's Jeremy?
The city employee that was with the long hair sitting here.
Sorry, guys, I also need to go.
Yeah.
It's.
So that would
I'm
be.
Gonna light a fire under people. We're gonna.
Yeah, we need to be. We need to maintain. The idea is we want there to be our own self-governing camp,
genuine
not governing. Depending on Jeremy. Why was Jeremy having people arrested? The two people arrested this week.
Well, somebody was smoking meth in front of that 10-year-old kid, and he was asked not to, and. By us, I wasn't there, but by campers, and the kid has always said, JC, he said, I don't like to have drugs around me. I'm just a kid, and, you know,
right.
At the public.
At the charging station.
That's just absurd. I mean,
well, why wouldn't the person be cooperative?
They're arrested and not just, you know, beat to a pulp. And we're trying to have anti-violence
that's
is not
news.
Any solution whatsoever. But unfortunately, it's the only thing that is that anybody seems to be listening to for any reason. It's absurd. And that doesn't mean it's a solution. We're going to gradually start working on social.
Yeah, so we need, I think if we had fire brigades with the fire extinguishers, with people that we know in their place, not random people that have a fire extinguisher that only
right,
they
right.
know about, and then a concerted effort at self-policing.
Yeah, and people having a feeling of buy-in, of ownership,
to the
currently
camp.
People don't.
Right.
It's because somebody else is wiping their butt. And to have that, it's got to be done incrementally, slowly.
I think we're doing better than we have. I mean, we're
so
slowly making progress, but
I
it's slow.
Really good about like doing small groups with folks to like
yeah.
warm up to like the process.
Yeah,
it is
correct.
Because you know, for a lot of people, because I don't really think about it, because I'm so used to meetings
yeah,
and this and that. Because we're like, let's have a meeting about the subcommittee and to create a meeting for another meeting,
right.
and you know
yeah.
that typical thing. And to some people. That's why they probably don't come. Is well, it's actually scary, even for some tough, wild people. But it's
yep.
it's a foreign world,
too,
and they like people like to be in control because it's out here. We feel safe, and just even not knowing what's going on in a meeting or something could be, you know, when I put myself in their shoes. So we have to make things comfortable for everybody to engage. And I just kind of like realized that today, you know.
Yeah, we need to really cultivate a leadership of people
yeah.
within the camp that
yeah.
everybody trusts, or at least enough
year.
People trust,
yeah.
and that they are okay. not like totally tweaked out so they miss the meetings.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to
remember and find who are the people that aren't. That wouldn't fit in this camp because this is we're a bunch of partiers, you know, the cool kids. You know, I was never a cool kid, but this is like the cool kid party
right.
table
got stuff
at lunch
you.
At the lunchroom. Where are all the people that are out there that don't fit in with us, and who's taking care of them? You know, we need to make sure that we're having creating visibility and response to their lives.
Suggest that people like probably like do something sometime like December. Like I know like there was
well,
a huge like I think like people mentioned how there was like 400 folks like from the camps and
yeah.
with the police.
Yeah.
I mean, I think 400 outnumbers
yeah,
that number and also
yeah,
before that, back in December there was a huge
yep.
show out.
Yeah, it was right.
Know,
yeah.
through,
I was
so
right there.
Something
yeah.
similar like that with other folks as well and with similar communications and I can like try to communicate with like several folks within the Houses Coalition and Abby's group to coordinate something like that.
Where are you guys going?
And just
okay,
and us seeing how housed people you know went toe to toe with the cops in a proper way, and that bridged a huge gap. There's nothing that replaces that, and but small things, just you know, that's why like people that just bring. Food and just show their hearts and
you're gonna get a phone
yeah,
soon,
like,
right?
Yeah, it would be stolen.
And that was a long time without a musical break, so here's one. This is another one by David Rovics, and it's called Douglas MacLeod.
MacLeod's a common name, though it used to be more common. Way across the ocean in Scotland. But then developers came and the MacLeods all had to leave from the hills they call the Highlands. Lots of them came here to North America. There are some in Portland town. And there's one named Douglas who seems intent on tearing the whole city down. Yes, Douglas MacLeod is a developer. He He's developing his bank account by destroying nice old houses and cutting down old trees in order to increase the amount of money flowing into his coffers so he can use it to buy more and more. He may think he's a real nice guy, but he's rotten to the core. Because Douglas McCloud is a developer, and I don't like him one bit. He's buying up the city of Portland town and turning it to shh. He got here in 99. Says so on his website. He came when there was money to be made. He came at a good time to buy low, sell high. Good time if you wanna get paid. A good time to make the most of your money. A good time to invest. A good time to buy a lot and set your sights on buying the rest. Douglas McCloud is a developer, and I don't like him one bit. He's buying up the city of Portland town and turning it to shh. He's got the city council in his pocket, progressive though they claim to be. They may be progressive on some things, but not when it comes to cutting down trees that stand in the way of development, in the way of the bottom line. His company is called Blue Sky Property. Guess you gotta cut the trees down to let the sun shine. Douglas McCloud is a developer, and I don't like him one bit. Buying up the city of Portland town and turning it to You won't find much about him on the web. Maybe he's a private kind of guy. Maybe he's just old, or maybe he's just worried about getting a virtual black eye. Because if you poke around, you'll find a lot of people who feel just like I do, who think Douglas McCloud is an idiot serving the interests of the privileged few. Douglas McCloud is a developer, and I don't like him one bit. He's buying up the city of Portland town and turning it to shit. He's buying up the city of Portland town and
And that's it for the 2021 view. We're going to now jump back to a flashback in 2002 for all you historical buffs, and also because it's useful to compare how much or how little often has changed, and to get an on the scene comparison of then and now. You might say it also fills up some empty net space, but it's not really that empty. I could make these shows shorter, and I probably should. But I also want to make these archives available to people, and that's one of the reasons I do this. The first thing you're going to hear is a Club Cruise show from May of 2002. And according to the records, it was Club Cruise number 151. This is a show that was created by activist Becky Johnson, who's still active, well, not in town anymore, and active mostly on other fronts, but she does chime in on homeless issues and give reports as part of the homeless activist community down in Seaside. Anyway, what she had on this show was me as host and CEO Michael Schmidt as guest. Schmidt was as you will hear, a rather interesting figure who supported a homeless civil rights action, although I don't know that he does anymore. I think he's back in town after having left for a while and has returned. He was denounced by the progressive establishment several years before 2002 because of his connection with Canfield Company, and he was CEO, I think, for Chamber of Commerce. And yet, when he apparently saw a vet being treated badly as a homeless person I became angry about the sleeping ban and allowed us to begin meetings in his, I guess it was where the Chamber of Commerce was meeting in the, what is now the Hotel Paradox and what was then, gosh, don't remember what the name of the hotel was at that point, but it was on the tip of my tongue. But in any case, we met regularly. He was helpful in trying to put together at least vocal opposition to the sleeping ban. And you can judge for yourself based on his own account. A lot of progressives never trusted him. I found him the kind of opportunities he gave to homeless activists to press their concerns, including a full-scale debate around each of the city council candidates in the 2002 election, persuaded me that, well, I like the guy anyway, so I've got a bias. But here you go. You can make that decision yourself as to what you decide about Michael Schmidt.